Hello, you are listening to the Modern Web Podcast, where we explore next generation frameworks, standards, and techniques. I'm Tracy Lee at Lady Leet on Twitter, and you can find us online at modern-web.org.
Hi, I'm Jeff Cross, and this is the Jeff Cross Show. With me today, we have Ben Lesh from Netflix and Alex Eagle from Google.
Hi, this is the Alex Eagle Show. Today, we're here with Jeff Cross from Google and Ben Lesh from Netflix.
I don't know either one of these two people.
Well, you're about to.
Oh, fantastic.
Actually, yeah. The first thing we do when we meet someone from the Angular team is we brand them with an Angular logo. So if I could, I brought a temporary tattoo.
Nice.
Maybe not so temporary. We'll see. So I've got my
mine lasted through the shower this
and
morning.
And my cloth there. I lost the tattoos. Do we know where the tattoos are?
Excuse me. Tattoos? Yeah, there they are.
Okay. So I'll go ahead and dampen the cloth here. So what we're going to do is we're going to apply it to the side of your face.
My face, tables. That's even better.
I'm going to dampen this cloth with some artisanal water. And then
on my face,
we remove the plastic seal.
Did he do this to you earlier?
No, mine happened while we were out drinking last night.
It just fell on him.
You passed out and it just
they were going around the whole table.
All right, we
just
need
stay
to,
still.
You'll need to be still for
would
this.
You need me to hold him?
You can ask some questions as he's being still waiting for this.
You can hold me as long as it's tender.
This will take about 30 seconds. So, Ben, what's your deepest fear? You can't answer it.
Angular tattoos.
Okay.
What's your deepest regret? TypeScript tattoos wouldn't be worse?
Oh, yeah. Ben is the only person who doesn't like TypeScript.
I like it until... I don't like it. Yeah. Mostly I like it.
Observables are probably the hardest thing to get right with TypeScript. All right. Have you been counting?
One, two, three, four, five.
Okay, it's probably good.
Yeah, sure.
All right, you ready?
Now, Brad says the best thing to do is to slide it down. Don't peel it off.
Slide it down?
Yeah, slide it down so that you're pressing against the tattoo the whole time.
That's going to drag it. All right, you can remove it.
Okay. Or you just leave it like that. That's pretty cool, right? That's
Okay.
What?
Looks pretty good. You're one of us now.
Yeah. Well, actually,
mine's on my arm.
Oh, okay.
All right, we're back.
Yeah. After having been branded.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How are you feeling? You don't notice it after a little while.
I feel a little bit like property now.
And people, when you walk around the conference, they look at you and you're like, oh, I must be handsome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's exactly what I think when people look at me.
Yeah,
it's all the time.
I like that you're wearing a Google product shirt.
I am. I rarely wear shirts that I pay for because I get so many free ones.
You'd be a sucker to pay for a shirt.
I know. They need to start giving out jeans at conferences. I wish they were firing socks out of the cannon because I think I'm one short for flying home tomorrow.
You have to go through and smell every used pair to figure out what you're going to use.
Yeah.
I was going to say they could hand out swag underpants.
Mm-hmm.
You never know.
Maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of different styles, though. I mean, with t-shirts, it's kind of, you know, the one style fits all, but...
That's true. That's true.
We could talk about, like, what kind of underpants styles we each prefer, or we could talk about something more technical.
Let's skip that, because we're...
We already know, basically. We've talked about that a number of times.
We're at ng-conf, and we know, like, just recently, Angular has... gone to release candidate, correct?
That's correct.
Yes.
RC, I don't know.
RC1.
RC1 still, okay. Yeah. So we've stabilized for a few days.
I'm wondering, real talk, how much scrambling was there right before the conference to get that done?
Real talk?
There was a fair amount of scrambling. So, I mean, so Rob Wormald went on stage in the day two keynote and took responsibility, which is true. So we had this meeting. We knew that the offline compiler was coming up, and we needed to change the packaging a little bit. But we still had everything under the Angular 2 NPM package, a single package, and we split it up into subcomponents that we called barrels. But that was weird. We had to invent a word. So
why barrels?
Well, because every other word was already used.
Sub package didn't quite fit. Bundles wasn't accurate.
Modules no good.
The English language is just lacking.
Yeah. Well, so the English language has lots of words.
So modules, you're gonna start calling them like pickles then. Like
that was
else barrel
theme. There's a design doc with pickles mentioned and why we decided not to go with pickles.
Oh man, the design docs were going so fast, I didn't even see
barrels.
Them. Yeah, so I mean, and obviously with barrels, then later you would have some other thing you would need to give a name, you would call that monkeys, you would be able to sort of carry the metaphor.
There
would have
been lots of good tooling ideas, tooling names from that. Packages, I don't know.
Can we fit more monkeys in this barrel? Oh, we can fit a lot of monkeys in the barrel, yeah. Igor. So what happened was we were having this meeting, and Rob and we had some basic agreement that we needed a UMD bundle for people who didn't want to do tooling. Just give me ES5, give me a JS file I can smack in a script tag. We wanted to have an ES6 distribution so people can do rollup and other, you know, tree shaking kind of tooling and do their own 6 to 5, maybe with Babel. And then we wanted to have vanilla ES5, but unbundled distributions, so you bundle it yourself. And then Rob at the end of the meeting was like, hey, what if we also didn't have barrels and we split things up actually into packages, and this would make things better for a few reasons. You wouldn't have one gigantic UMD bundle, you'd have several, you could pick and choose. People might want to use our DI and not use forms. And so I think Igor was, this had come up before and it was resisted, and Igor was at this moment he was feeling more malleable about it. So they decided to go for it. It was the last chance before release candidate, and now we have a commitment to keeping things the same. So everybody really wanted to have no regrets, right? Nope. No regrets. Release candidate is what we wanted. Uh-huh. We did everything we needed to do before we hit it.
Mm-hmm. No regrets.
No regrets.
So Igor, I've found, is I think if you're just persistent with him about a good point, he becomes malleable over time.
Mm-hmm. Unless it's Mishko. He resists Mishko just for the sake of it.
Just respect.
Yeah, just respect.
there's a fantastic photo. I don't know if it's out there in the world, but Mishko had his newborn, I don't know, maybe 3-4 week old baby in his arm at the office, arguing with Igor quite heatedly about what the controversy of the day was. That's so cute.
That was for the life cycle hooks.
Right. Yeah, whether we were going to use ES6 symbols or mm-hmm. the on init. Mm-hmm. NG on init is what we settled on. But I mean, having a baby really helps to diffuse the tension in the room.
Mm-hmm. And they're like BFFs. Like, yeah. We all argue, but everyone's friends.
That's true.
Except sometimes we argue, and I wouldn't say we're really friends.
I don't think we have ever argued, Jeff.
We argue about creative direction.
Can you tell me one time that we've had an argument about creative direction?
I wanted to make a funny video for NGConf where we would do some espionage stuff.
Yeah.
And you shot it down and said, I don't think it would be funny. And there was kind of a rift after
that. I mean, we just didn't work out the production. We're going to have a lot more funny videos coming up. There was all this repackaging work to do. It kind of... Mm-hmm.
Do we need to repair this relationship?
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah. Do you have any experience as sort of a marital or relationship counselor?
I'm afraid not. But I tell you what, why don't you, we'll switch seats. Come on. You can, I guess we'll sit a little closer.
All right.
So
I felt like you weren't telling me everything that you were thinking.
And I felt like you weren't listening to everything I was saying.
Well, I felt like you were saying things that you didn't really mean.
And I felt like you were meaning things I wasn't really saying.
Well, I think I can agree to half of that.
I can agree to the other half.
Oh, all right. Yeah.
Let's make the video.
Yeah. Can we make a video right now? Actually, do you have a camera handy? We could make a video right now. No? Okay, I'm being told we don't. Okay. All right.
After we get back, once everything is stable.
We're going to make a fantastic...
Back. I don't like looking back and forth.
Okay. Yeah, right. Yeah. No, I'll sit over here. No?
Yeah, but you just... There
you
go.
Oh, I can sit in the middle? Mm-hmm.
Oh. Oh, yep. This is nice.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah.
So, Ben, let's talk about RxJS.
Okay.
If I could take over the host role.
Yeah.
Turn the tables on you.
I'm really wondering if it's going to hit release candidate by RxConf.
I think I saw beta 7. Was beta 7 pushed this week?
Beta 7, I believe, yes, is out.
Cool. So. Yeah, I accidentally installed it, and I got NPM complaining at me.
Yeah, that happened to me, too. Thing.
When's it gonna be release candidate?
It's close. There's a set of about 8 issues that say blocking 5.0 release,
and they're all probably blocked on Rob Wormald.
Yeah,
getting some input.
Basically, all Rob.
So it seems like all problems point back to Rob Wormald. would you guys say that's accurate? But also, all good things point back to him. So.
A lot of solutions. Yeah. Yeah. He's an active member of our team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, what I'm hoping for is that now that Angular is in RC, you don't want to have a beta dependency, right? So I'm hoping to pull in more help from
Rob.
Yeah, I literally was poking Brad Green, like physically poking
him. Asking him to poke mm-hmm. Rob Wormald.
Yeah, give this to Rob. That's what I was doing.
Yeah, he's the new observable master. Everyone goes to him for all the observable questions on the team. Like, what's a flat map? What's a switch map? Why is it called switch map? Mm-hmm. And he always just says, well, Bimlish thought it was a good idea.
Right. Well, the R in RX actually stands for Rob. I mean,
Rob extension.
It predates him using it by a lot, but Microsoft, they knew that Rob Wormald.
They didn't know who it would be, but they knew it would be like a Rob.
A Rob. Well, actually, I think they originally had a Rob whose last name started with X, which made more sense at the time.
Yeah, one letter off, huh?
Mm-hmm. Rob X, right?
Very, very close.
Rob Zermald?
Rob Xylophone.
Yeah. Maybe he would be open to changing his name.
If anybody who's watching writes children's books, by the way, please, like, there have got to be more words that start with X. I don't want to read any more X-ray or xylophone. Boring. Mm-hmm. X-ray's not even a word.
Xenophobia was another one. That's a lot of children's books.
I think lots of children's books talk about xenophobia. Uh-huh.
Children are natural xenophobes.
Well, I believe the Trump campaign actually hands those out to children.
Yeah, yeah, I saw those at his last rally.
I didn't know this was going to be about politics.
Yeah, is it okay for us to really go into politics?
I don't think that's legal in Utah.
Okay, yeah, no more politics.
Okay, fair.
We acknowledge there are presidential candidates.
Mm-hmm. And probably one of them will be the president.
Mm-hmm.
More than likely. Or somewhat presidential in some fashion at some point.
Yeah, until we have some sort of really good AI that can take that over.
We're
not that far off.
Right.
Yeah, I mean...
AlphaGo.
Yeah, AlphaGo was an amazing success. I think if we had something that could be president...
If you can win Go, you can run a country.
Yeah. Well, I think if there was at least one of the presidential candidates this year that wanted to build a wall between the United States and computers. So
I acknowledge there were stories about that.
That was probably going to keep the AI from ever becoming president.
Right.
Sorry.
Yeah, until they... I think actually Boston Dynamics does have things that climb over walls, don't they?
Just about... Everything that can climb can get over a wall.
A cat can go over a wall.
Right.
Oh.
I've seen it on YouTube.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, YouTube.
Did you see that one?
No.
There was a cat and he was being real cute.
Uh-huh. So TypeScript. Now, you guys mentioned that I don't like TypeScript. That's
you complain about TypeScript.
I will say that most of the issues that we get in RxJS are typings related.
Mm-hmm.
And that... TypeScript's type system doesn't always, you know, squarely fit RxJS's.
But they've been really adaptive to the needs of the RX project.
They have.
They sent you pull requests to make your build faster. It's really,
yes,
really
they did.
Nice
that
of them.
That was extremely nice of them. Mm-hmm. I'm really kind of hoping they can reconsider the like type overrides for methods that have like a rest first type behavior. There's an issue out there like that.
Yeah,
now, can't do that for like the transpilation, obviously, because there's like underlying issues with doing that. But just for the type verification piece, and then but that would also have like variadic generics and.
Alex has actually discouraged this, and he'll tell you why.
Well, it came up yesterday in one of our sessions. Rado was explaining that the TypeScript emit to be performant needs to not be type aware for the most part, unless it needs to know about renaming things. It would be less performant if they had to retype check everything in order to emit files. I think this is one of the reasons.
Yeah.
And I think the other reason is that you guys have a penchant for this sort of API vanity that you want it to look really, really good. You want it to like, because you could express this the same thing in another way, right? The variadic, you mean you could chain another method.
Or you could pass an array instead or something, but no one wants to write those brackets. Like, nobody does.
Yeah, it is less elegant. It's true.
It's you know,
and I like the. I mean, you guys also push the envelope on the module reopening. So this is where one file can contribute additional symbols that appear inside of another external module, right? So this is where,
which we did for Angular, really. For
that was when I was driving the observable stuff, TypeScript. And I was like, we need to have independent operators, and the typings need to work, and we don't want to declare them on the observable.
Right.
And then I said, I'm done. Rob Wormald, you take over.
It has been amazing how much several of us have been really engaged with the TypeScript team and gotten stuff in. And
what we really wanted was function bind support, the ES7 proposal. Mm-hmm. And I think not everyone agreed on how to implement that on the TC39. And so TypeScript was like, not quite yet. Even though with decorators, I mean, they did that before anyone cared about it, right?
Right.
So, yeah, decorators.
Slippery slope. So for slope, give me function bind, please. So
yeah, function bind expression makes a big difference in with RxJS. Like I most of our projects at Netflix use Babel, and I use function bind all the time. Mm. And if that were to exist in TypeScript, then the need for that the patch operator, the add mm-hmm. operator map or whatever, like that would just go away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would make a lot of things nicer. Because right now we have this best practice of you import all the auto patching operators in a single place in your application, so that it's not surprising when something's not been patched because of some side effects.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, we could get rid of that by just importing when you need it. So TypeScript team, if you're listening, you would win Ben over to TypeScript if you just would add function bind support, and we could get rid of this crazy. Yeah.
There would actually probably be a lot of projects at Netflix that would get ported over to TypeScript for real, because there's a lot of people that are fans of typed languages there. But at the same time, there's certain ergonomics around, especially when you're using Rx, that aren't great. So we're trying to, the Rx folks are trying their best to handle that. David Driscoll does an awesome job. It's, you know,
every time I have a problem upgrading to Rx, it's his commit that I see. Him doing something good, but it's like, okay, now we have to update our TypeScript version and mm-hmm. figure out where to get this. Mm-hmm. Symbol typings from, but right. He's great.
Yeah, yeah. Even though he keeps Driscolling our build,
he keeps Driscolling my days.
Is that a phrase now in mm-hmm. English?
I guess. There you go. Also, another phrase that we developed last night. So we have the new compiler, which but we're going to talk about that, right?
Yeah,
I just brought it up and totally took talk over
about
your conversation.
We're going to talk about Alex's project.
Yeah. So we can just like zoom in on me at this point.
How much time is he guaranteed, like 1 minute, to talk about this compiler thing?
Yeah, so we added a new compiler. It runs offline. We call it static. It's faster, slower, bigger, smaller. It's great. It's a bee's knees. Tobias, like, nailed this whole thing. I mean, he wrote the compiler that was running in the online mode, so this is the dynamic kind. And then he rewrote tons of stuff in there to make it work as a build step. It's amazing. So I wrapped it with something that looks like TSC to make it easier drop-in replacement in the build pipeline. And it's cool.
It's awesome. So is that like something people can go out and see?
We have a package that's released on NPM. There's some like NG4 and NGIF weren't working as of, you know, the night before the conference, and so we were scrambling. The RC2 doesn't have bugs that I know of, so I think when RC2 comes out, that's a good time people can give it a try. We also haven't really written docs. It has a short README, but we need some docs, and I was going to work on a blog post to explain it some more. Right now, I think all people have is like what Mishko showed and the demo that is only on Rob's laptop.
Right. Yeah. Right. So we just got to keep Rob safe.
Yeah, well, his laptop.
And his password. Not necessarily
yeah.
Rob.
Yeah.
So the Tobias Bosch.
Here we go.
Here, him and I, we have a history, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh. And I don't know, you might not know this. He knows. So I was actually talking to Pete Bacon-Darwin about this yesterday. And what it is at one point in time, I had written a very large PR for, a couple large PRs, I think, for Angular 1.
SVG support in Angular 1.
Oh, that was the second one. The first one was all the date-time directives.
Mm.
And it for that one alone, like, I looked at it and realized that I had written something like 13% of Angular 1 at that point. Like, if that was, then that was going
to
be
hard. Anything involving date, just for whatever reason, is the most difficult thing to implement.
Right, right. For better or worse, that was what it was. And I worked pretty hard on it. It was before I worked for Netflix or any of that. And, and it was merged, but it was merged in such a way that Tobias's name was on it. And not mine. So I was never added
to amend the commit or something.
So then, something. You know, that was kind of like, oh, well, I got hired at Netflix, and so I was kind of like, well, I work at Netflix now. It's not a big deal, but I missed out on my GitHub cred, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then...
That's true. You would have had recruiters all over you after that one. I think that is why.
Because they look
why,
at commit history. Recruiters.
Well, no, they go to the homepage, and they look how green you are. And,
you know, it is something you can show people. Like, if you're in, you know, like Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and you say, well, I've wrote this huge chunk of Angular, and mm-hmm. here's my name in the contributors list to prove it. Yeah. It does mean something.
That's what I did for Rx. I just added like a couple of scripts and maybe a README or something.
Yeah.
For a while, I was like one of the top five contributors.
Yeah. It's such a big deal to be an Rx contributor.
I had the opposite experience in the scramble to get the stuff in for the conference. A couple of Tobias's changes have my name on them. So I've had some sort of justice.
Wait. I'm not done. So like,
okay, right. Sorry.
So we then Igor and
I'm
I work on
the story. Right.
We refactored the compiler to handle SVG, and we did that like I paired on it, and I submitted a pull request. Tobias merges that under Tobias's name, and so after that, I was giving Tobias a hard time, like anytime I talked to him, and it actually did bother him, so I stopped doing it. But then Jeff agreed.
Tobias, super nice guy.
He's
never intentionally
guy.
Do something.
Yeah,
like
he's
that.
He's a totally
yeah.
great guy.
Yeah.
And Jeff agreed to contractually mention my name in every one of his talks for like the next 5 years. That was like mm-hmm. a year and a half ago.
And I have done it. I think you've been at most of the talks I've given in the past couple years. And even 2 days ago, I mentioned you and said thank you for whatever contribution you think you've made.
for these lost GitHub commits you've done.
Yeah. So I've kept my word.
So no,
even though I had nothing to do with the original offense, I took it upon myself.
PBD, Pete Bacon Darwin, had a really great idea, which was wait for one of Tobias's huge refactors
mm-hmm.
and then just check it in under my name.
Mm-hmm.
Swap the history out.
So I don't know what this used to look like. I mean, now in GitHub, you see both like the author and the committer like separately show up on the page. So,
yeah, I don't know what it is.
Sometimes,
yeah.
So like if I take somebody's PR and I do the merge, their name is still on it. And also, you take a PR, you take a bunch of commits. And so Tobias and I had a couple of PRs just going back and forth, each of us throwing commits into it. And so actually the PR got merged with a mix of the two of us, but then I would do some squashes, and so yeah, all of his stuff would be like, oh, let me squash it up into mine, and then
right,
my name is there.
Yeah, I know Tobias's rebasing process, and I can see how it happened, because usually after everything works, he'll then squash everything into a single commit, unstage everything, and then start to stage things one at a time and create new individual commits to make
right,
it logical.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's probably what happened there.
Yeah. Either, I never really investigated what happened, just I kind of noticed it was like, oh well, like, but it was
mm-hmm.
fun for me to tease poor Tobias mm-hmm. about until I realized it actually did bother him because he's a really nice guy.
To have your own slide like in my presentations. I would say, I think Spin Lash and have your picture. So.
Right.
But now I've just gone to just mentioning you.
Just mention in passing. Uh-huh. It fulfills the contract. So
exactly.
If he doesn't do it, according to the contract, I own half of Google. It's very important.
It's lucrative.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Seems like you have a pretty good incentive to
it depends on which half.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure all the halves are good.
Yeah.
Right?
Some halves are good now, some halves will...
Stay on message, Jeff.
Okay.
They keep trying to just give me Nest to like make me go away, and I'm like, no.
That's not part of Google.
Right. No, that's an Alphabet company.
Oh,
see,
I see
how they got around the contract. They're like, okay, joke's on you. We're splitting everything. And
yep, sorry.
Your half has been diluted.
Oh, I have so many funny ideas of Google properties that I would claim that you're going to win, but that wouldn't be a nice thing to say about any of them.
Not until after performance review time.
Right.
Yeah. You gotta wait for that to be done.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of performance reviews, I had a fun moment right before the day 2 keynote. So I was going on at last, and obviously Brad had to go on first. Sat next to him at breakfast, and they gave us these breakfast tacos because it was Cinco de Mayo. And they were in this packaging. It's a lot like Jeff and I were in the airport on our way here. I was trying to open an SD card, and it's tamper-proof, right? But I don't know why you would put tamper-proof packaging for a breakfast taco. Especially because I didn't have any tools with me, and like we're gonna go on stage, so I just like, and I just like force it as hard as I can, and then it tears, and my taco flips out and hits Brad in the face, and then runs down his shirt.
You're not going for promotion, are you?
No.
Okay.
How much satisfaction did you get out of that, though? Like, was that?
It was hilarious. I mean, you know, the table was laughing, so I, and Brad did not have to go change his shirt, so it was okay. It could have gone worse.
Wish I could have been there.
Well.
That's why you always have to have your GoPro going
just
to capture these.
Just like,
well,
just
we
to,
broke that
just
SD
keep it
card.
Going, would you just stand up and yell food fight?
Yeah, there has to be a moment where everyone's staring at Brad, waiting to see what happens. And he has to yell it.
Right, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So the food of this conference has been really good. There's
mm-hmm.
been, well, there was bacon-wrapped bacon.
Yes.
Which was...
I think we only had three heart attacks yesterday as a result of that, so that was good.
It's like three, there's, you know, 2,000 people here. So
yeah, that's like less
than
1%.
Three people
so.
Dropped, you know, yeah.
I guess
they're all safe now.
No, statistically likely. I mean, you know, how many people do you expect to die at a large conference like this? It's probably, you know, somewhere between zero and, you know, one-digit number.
It's, and there's, you got to figure in the amount of bacon at the conference, too, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a direct relationship. Direct correlation.
So Rx, I know that he's been trying to use Rx. Using Rx.
I've been using Rx. No, I've been successful in making it map things and subscribe to things. Mm-hmm. And I probably break some of the rules of Rx sometimes. I've stopped extending things. I've stopped extending subjects because it always turns out to be a bad idea. But yeah, I use Rx quite a bit.
I don't.
No.
Well, I mean, I have to do the build tooling, so I don't really write apps most of the time.
Zerbals are great for build tooling.
I do make Rx compile under all kinds of weird conditions and different versions of TypeScript, and like you swap out some standard libraries, and
that's good.
You know, and we had some minor typings issues because that stuff is still shaking out.
I use Rx when I use it, I'm fine. When I'm working on it, I think 90% of the time it just breaks stuff, and then I get it working, and then I commit that.
Right. So. Break and then fix. Yep. Yep. Yep.
So, Ben, how long are your chains of operators on observables?
On average, depends on what I'm doing. So, let's just say that I was going to do something really complicated like the multiplex WebSocket thing. You're probably looking at maybe 7 operators or so, and something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time, I think it's usually like 3 or 4.
Are you pretty subscription conservative in? I'm sorry, I'm changing totally to technical things here. But this is something I always go up against. Is like, should I do multiple things in a map or something, like do filtering and mapping in the same thing, and say like, rather than create a filter and then a map and then another filter after that?
You know, I tend to do the filter and then the map. RxJS5 right now isn't particularly optimized for that, but there's plans coming down the pipe to kind of flatten those things when they're actually executed. So having them all in one step wouldn't really buy you anything. Maybe some disorganization.
We'll create an offline compiler for Rx too.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah. I mean, you want to have a DSL for this thing anyway, right. So we'll just...
it just converts it into imperative code.
it's sort of isomorphic with, a CLR.NET runtime bytecode, and we'll just, then we can reverse transmogrify that back into JavaScript, and then you're set.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
Yeah, we like to build tooling.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun.
I'm excited about that.
Sounds great. But yeah, am I subscription adverse... I try to limit, if I find like a particular, like I'm working on a component or something, and I find that I'm managing like more than 2 subscriptions to things, I feel like either maybe I'm doing too much with observables, or more than likely whatever actions or whatever I'm composing up above probably weren't composed well, and I'm doing mm-hmm. something with like 2 hot observables or something.
You should see some of the crazy things I've done. But in Angular, it manages subscriptions for you if you use the async pipe. I always try to make sure I just create the observables, and then in my template, let it create the subscription and dispose of it, so I don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, any sort of like platformy stuff that I write that handles observables, I usually, well, for one, I try to make it handle promises as well, because some people are just more comfortable with that. But I usually try to make it so they don't have to manage a subscription, like, ever. Like, mm-hmm. you give some function an observable and let that deal with
mm-hmm.
When to subscribe or unsubscribe. And actually, a lot of the time, managing unsubscription, really what you wanted to do was do, like, a take until.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd trigger some other event that caused your observable to stop emitting values instead of... you know, very explicitly and imperatively, like calling unsubscribe on a subject,
mm-hmm.
You could just compose that in. So that's when I say, like, if I see more than one or more than 2 subscriptions or so
mm-hmm.
in a component, I think, I might not be doing this right. Like, I probably should be firing some event that, you know, goes up into an observable and does it take until on
mm-hmm.
whatever streams I'm trying to manage. So.
Having done a lot of work in Java, we passed streams around, we started using annotations to indicate that, like, this method's contract includes that it will close the stream that it's handed. You were just mentioning if you pass an observable around, it's not clear whose job it is to unsubscribe and clean up. Any thought about how you can use static analysis to describe the contract of of what should be done with this observable?
I've honestly never thought about it.
Did you have to? I mean, are there bugs where subscriptions leak because?
You
intended for it to be closed by the method you hand it to.
There's definitely like one of the things that people can do is it's the same as registering like an event listener on a DOM element and then just forgetting to unregister it.
Mm-hmm.
Would be I'm going to set up some observable interval and have it doing something and then never unsubscribe and you mm-hmm. go to another view and it's still ticking along in the background like
right.
trying to update stuff that isn't even there.
Right.
So yeah, that's definitely a problem that can happen, but I've never considered an approach like that.
Yeah, and you also have in Java, and I forget if other languages have this, but sort of a try with resources block. So the finally will automatic. So you know, in the try, you initialize something that needs to be closed or finalized, and then in the finally, it always does. I haven't thought about that much either, but just when you mentioned it, it sounds like an interesting thing to look at.
You could get that standardized in the JavaScript language.
Yeah, I'll talk to Joffer about
mm-hmm.
that. Jaffer Hussein, who's probably not watching this, but if he is, there you go. More standards.
You,
I mean,
use some of that free time of yours to add another standard to the spec.
I would think as a start, you put a decorator on the method that says what the contract is, and then you can do some static analysis to enforce it.
Put a decorator on it. That's the solution.
We put a decorator on it. Portlandia reference. Uh-huh. And the other thing I was curious about is. Reactive programming is hot, fashionable right now.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen misuses of Rx? And I'm wondering.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I've seen a refactoring pipeline expressed in terms of an observable, which might be the correct thing to do, but it doesn't like it's not clear whether someone proposes this because they've mapped out the possibilities and this is the right fit, or it's just the fashion.
So I've seen Rx misused a variety of ways, and some people don't consider this a misuse, but like. If you're doing like, oh, I've got this array and all I want to do is map and filter it and it's a very, very small array,
mm-hmm.
don't use Rx for that. Just use map and filter. It's probably faster. Mm-hmm. If you've got some huge array or something and you want to use Rx to do that because you're trying to reduce those intermediary arrays from being allocated and garbage collected, then that's probably an okay use. But
yeah,
I see that. The one thing I see most often is people pumping things through subjects everywhere. Like they'll have an observable and then they'll subscribe to it, and in the subscription they'll pump values to some other subject they've got somewhere else, and that's it's usually unnecessary.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit of an anti-pattern. Like a subject is really maybe if you have like in React, for example, it's unicast, like all of your click events or whatever, you can only provide one function to be handled by a click.
Right.
And there you might want to take that and then pump a value into a subject or something because that's like a valid use case for a subject where like people get to where they're using them for everything. And then the weirdest one that I see really a lot, and this is, I see this done with promises sometimes too, are people leaking out the notifiers with, so like they'll take the observer, they'll create an observable, they'll take the observer, and then they'll like leak it outside of the observable closure by assigning it to some outer scope so they can then notify things like that way. Or they'll even use subjects for that too. And you know, you don't really want to leak out the thing that can make your stream notify. You try to keep that contained in the stream. But
yeah.
Those are the big ones.
Okay.
That I see.
Well, I guess maybe we should write Rx lint.
So I was going to say, add a tool to it.
Yeah, hey, well, you have a tool for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Does it involve decorators?
Mm, I could.
Maybe.
Yeah, I think it should definitely involve decorators.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Actually, we have one of our proposals for handling, in the Angular framework, for understanding which decorators we should act on in the offline compiler would be to have meta decorators. So you just decorate the decorator. And, yeah, of course, it's funny, but also maybe the right thing to
but
do.
But also brilliant.
Yeah, of course. Hey, we have an abstraction. Let's use it more.
How do you know what meta decorators to act on?
Well, you would have known meta. The meta decorator would have, have some data inside that says, the thing that I decorate is a, you know, should be retained at runtime or should be only design time decorator, or it should, you know, it acts like an Angular component, even though it might not be the add component decorator.
Right.
Or something silly. I mean, you could put silly things in there too.
See a very decorator heavy world ahead of us.
Yeah, so actually there's an interesting bit about decorators that just came up as we were working on the offline compiler and we were running these tree shakers and they weren't tree shaking anything out. And so we found this utility that lets you get a tree map of the size of your binary and where all the libraries that it came from. We're like, we have every Rx operator still in here. We have HTTP forms, we have the Angular compiler. We don't use any of that in our application. It turns out decorators have two global side effects. So one is if you use the reflect metadata, it adds it to this global map so that you can later get back the metadata that was lost in the JS emit, which you could turn off. But the other is that the decorator itself is a function that can have arbitrary side effects, and it can have side effects on the thing that it decorates. So you can't remove any of them statically, right? You have to wait until you see observe the runtime behavior before you know whether it's safe to remove this or not.
Okay.
So it turns out for tree shaking, we actually need annotations, which was the other proposal. In AdScript, way back in the day, we had annotations, right? So I think we might just go back to AdScript is the plan.
So is this something that the Angular team is going to be, I'm assuming, talking to the TC39 about?
Yeah, so Mishko's already started the conversation, and we need to follow up on that. But it turns out... So there are two problems. One is simply making the tree shaker work by lowering the syntax, and that we just did ourselves. So in this compiler tool that we announced at the keynote, we before we hand the code to TypeScript, we just walk through, we find the decorators, we lower them into static objects that are attached to the class itself, and then a tree shakes fine. So we basically just take the syntax and just use it to create annotations instead. But the second problem is that means if you did have any dynamic behavior in your decorator, it just doesn't happen anymore. So
right.
You might take your application and convert it to be statically analyzed, and then it doesn't work.
So if I write my own custom decorator, though, you guys are not going to do that to my custom. You're just looking for specific decorators.
No, I mean, the decorators. Right now, we lower all of them to annotations.
I thought we had a whitelist of decorators.
No, because I mean, you need to be able to make your own decorator that that extends from one of Angular's decorators. I mean, we don't want to have anything that's first party only, right? You should be able
so
to
now,
write your own.
Now we're getting into the meta decorators, like you can use those to
maybe
to,
that's on the table.
Decorator actually annotation.
I mean, custom decorators are fine, but custom decorators with runtime side effects. Either you have to tell us, hey, like this one, I want to keep it this way, keep it as a decorator, do the reflect metadata thing. I know it won't tree shake. That's fine. This will always be in the application, regardless of whether I use it or not. Or we have to give you an error and say you can't do offline compilation because some of your decorators are not statically analyzable. So I don't know. It only came up in the last few weeks. So that's like the hot issue of the day for
the
spec.
We should have led in with that.
And who knows when
nobody's
when
still
this
watching.
Will publish. Maybe this will go online 3 months from now and everything will be completely different.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that'll be nice because we'll watch it and we'll say, oh, we looked so happy. So
that is
we had Angular stickers on our faces.
Yeah, this was that's like the most interesting and disturbing thing I've learned today.
Mm-hmm.
And
everything will be fine. Everything will be fine.
So no, that's
open a GitHub issue, and we'll respond to it. There's probably a GitHub issue about this somewhere. Maybe not. I shouldn't make that.
No, I don't. I don't think there is. I assume like if people start using the static compiler and maybe I suspect there are a lot of people who have written metaprogramming style decorators and they'll run into this. So I don't know.
Alex is to blame for it.
Well, you guys both know Jay Phelps.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote Core Decorators, which actually is pretty popular. It's a set of very common decorators, so you can do things like throttle a function or auto bind a function, which is more useful in React because you tend to have to like bind. Like where you guys are doing something nice with your components, where if you have a method on your component, you can call it and it'll retain the this context and all of that because of what you're doing. Like in React, you're literally just passing a function reference to the next component, mm-hmm. so you have to bind it to mm-hmm. whatever its source was. So there's this auto bind decorator that can take care of that for you, so your code doesn't get all ugly.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he's got a nice set of components,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know if he knows that. But this is the first I've heard where
I think
tree shaking it hurts tree shaking to have decorators.
Yeah, and I think you can, you know, another workaround would be to teach the tree shaker that it's okay to remove the Rx operators I don't use, even though they have what appears to you to be a global side effect, like, oh, I'm going to mark it in some way that says, don't worry, guy. No, it's not a problem. This thing is a function. It does whatever it wants, but all it actually does is add some static data, so it's fine. Mm-hmm. And then the tree shaker would remove it. But, you know, I mean, it's hard for us to explain to users the right way to configure rollup or closure compiler or whatever other tree shakers come out. It's just, you know, makes the configuration space bigger for all of them.
Hmm.
I like the meta decorator idea. I like the idea of, like, decorators by default, they would keep their behavior that's currently in stage zero in TC39, and then if the meta decorator says this is a design time decorator or it's a, you know, statically, this is a static decorator. And Pete Bacon Darwin suggested, he thought he saw something in the spec, actually, which we need to go track down, that might be this kind of cold decorator. I know hot and cold is your word.
A decorator named with a symbol?
Yes, I guess
something that's really weird.
So it would be like at, and then it would be a symbol, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So you would know which one it is. Sure. Yeah, we could put that on the table. Yeah, it's exciting. Right. Always changing.
Yep. Oh, wait, so who's the host now?
Let's switch back. I think you should probably wrap it up.
Oh,
I mean, this was your chair.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
All right, so thanks everybody for listening to our Modern Web Podcast. This, again, is Jeff Cross. This is Alex Eagle. And I'm Ben Lesh. And mm-hmm. It's good talk,
follow
guys.
Follow us on the internets.
On the internets.
Mm-hmm.
On the Twitters.
Yeah.
I'm on the internets.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I have, I can actually show you on my phone after the podcast. I'll show you, I have an internet
Twitter
page.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Can you guys hug?
All right. We've been requested by our producer.
We need to stay low, right? I mean,
yeah.
Like this?
The same frame.
Okay. Yeah.
And
scene.
Yeah. Very nice.
Great. I love that Shai has agreed to get into
bed. Okay, Shai, you ready? Where do you want it?
He'll agree to anything.
You want the A right side?
You could have told him to sit in his underwear
framework.
No, not the
monitoring. Okay, ready?
Ready to me? Yeah. Okay, on my forehead?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, now we have to count to 30.
Take a picture.
30.
Like a meta picture.
Do you want the towel version too?
I'm going to actually do, I have the crystal ball, and I want to set up a table with Ask Me Anything and this sticker.
Ah, yes.
Right?
Do you have some sort of a hat that looks...
Turban?
Yeah. Well, I don't want to be, insensitive to cultures.
Because you're from Google and you need to, yeah.
Yeah, I have to stay within the law.
Yeah, so,
anything I say can be used against Google in a court
of
law.
Can you bless me?
Gesundheit.
Thank you. I needed that.
do you want to start counting now?
One.
We're probably good, right?
10.
Okay. 10, okay. 15, let's see.
15. Whoa.
Yeah, this is what Brad Green says to do. Ah.
That looks good. Thanks for listening. To find more podcasts, videos, and online conferences, check out modern-web.org or find us on Twitter @modernweb_. See you around the internet.